Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Welcome back to the Inside Lacrosse Preps Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined once again by Ty Zanders. And Ty, we are going to lead this podcast with the biggest news in the history of the Inside Lacrosse recruiting database. The people asked, and we gave them what they want. What did they want, Ty?
They wanted, it was a very simple ask. They wanted a commit list sorted by school. And you could search by school in our old, you know, function. But now, D1, D2, D3, you have it all.
It's divided by, as you said, division and school, and also by class year. So there's a drop down at the top. You can look at the 2018 commits, 2019 commits, 2020s, and obviously we'll continue to add as we update. But then once you scroll down, you see, as you say, that if you're looking at the Division One page, there's also Women's Division One, which a Twitter comment inquired about. Certainly an important note to make. But then you can scroll through. So you start with Air Force, and you scroll all the way on down to Yale, and you can see who the commits are. It's the way that this page had been oriented in many prior incarnations, and we didn't do away with the chronological commit list either, because I do think that there's some value in that, particularly in terms of preparing for this podcast. We last recorded and dropped this on October 26th, so I looked back and just took a catalog of who has committed since October 26th. What is the news? And we're going to start at a place that we left off with last time. But before we do, I want to give a shout out to Wes Kraft and Mike Gilbert for all the work that they put in to developing that new feature on the Inside Lacrosse recruiting database. But Ty, when you and I last spoke, we talked about Virginia's recruitment and what that meant. And they have been very active since you kind of teased the prospect of a couple of forthcoming commitments to the Cavaliers, and since then they have added Patrick McIntosh, Mikey Hairmeyer, Connell Kumar, and Ben Ware.
It's a pretty good run for them. I know it's interesting just to think about how their classes come together. All these commits have happened in a span of 5 weeks. Their entire 2020 class came together in a pretty short time. I'd imagine that UVA fans were freaking out as they saw schools like Carolina and Notre Dame and Yale and whoever pick up 2020s in September. Although Notre Dame also went a little slow and just kind of wondering, what's going on? What's happening? Are they choosing other schools? Are people still interested? And then, bam, they've come up with some of the best players in the country. And numbers-wise, they are right there with the amount of kids they have in their 19 class. I think it's 7-7 or maybe 8-7. And if I had to guess, they'll probably take their time with the rest of the 2020 class. But, McIntosh is one of those commits that, we did tease it a little bit. He was between Georgetown and UVA. I think the day we released it, he committed to UVA that night on a Friday night. But he's a kid who plays a lot of box. He's a California kid. You would think he's Canadian. Plays at Salisbury and has been outstanding with the Sweet Lex, national team. Just a really crafty lefty, very creative scorer. I think he'll pair very well with Russell Mayer. I think I asked a couple guys, would they prefer to have Mayer and McIntosh or one of the big two, Grimes or O'Neal? There were a few guys that said they'd rather have those two together. And I think it's a good little 1-2 punch for them. Mayer can maybe run midfield after flipping from Syracuse a few weeks ago. But I like this group a lot. I think that it's a group that will probably contend for the number one spot when the time comes. But they're racking him up. The midfield group is really strong. Connell Kumar shoots it so well, lefty or righty. And Ben Ware flipped from Virginia in the last week or so. He was committed to Ohio State. And he's just in-state kid. I think whenever you get an in-state kid to pay that tuition, it kind of helps the rest of your class and how it comes together. And he's a kid that, to me, fits the way they play defensively perfectly. Great stick, pushes transition. I think it'll be awesome off the wings. That's a nice get for them.
Yeah, I agree. I got an opportunity to see Ware play a couple times over the summer with Black Wolf. And, as an Ohio State commit, he was part of a really strong group. Going to, the St. Stephen, St. Agnes, long stick mini switch into Virginia, for me, I had a similar reaction to you. He's 6'3", 200 pounds, and he really, the thing that I was so impressed by watching him play is just how much he throws his body around. He plays so fast, and it kind of comes alongside this physicality that, you know, really made a strong impression on me. I think he's a really high-end player. One of the things that you mentioned that became kind of the second biggest piece of news in the recruiting landscape over the last 2 weeks is Syracuse and the number of folks that have decommitted from Central New York over the course of the last month and a half, the most recent and high profile of which was Hill Academy attackman Joshua Sawada, who switched to Michigan. This, you know, kind of sounded the alarm bell among a lot of Syracuse fans. What was your reaction, first of all, to Sawada's making his commitment to Michigan, and then secondly, for what it means for Syracuse?
I think the Sawada addition, you know, for Michigan, I think can kind of help revolutionize that class. It was a group that had a good amount of holdovers from, you know, John Paul's tenure there, and Connery has, you know, parted ways with a few commits under JP and added a bunch and flipped a few. So he's doing work there, and I think Zawada is a player that will probably come in and start, whether it's attack or midfield, from day one. They feel very good about him, and they should. He was someone who crushed it at the Geico Nationals. Got to watch him up close and personal, and just was scoring left and right. But I think on the other end, yeah, I mean, there's every reason to be worried about, you know, Syracuse right now. I think they're still going to win. I don't think they're in trouble as a program, but when you lose what I call their probably the four best commits between their 19 and 20 classes, they have every reason to scratch their heads and wonder what's going on. I think that, not to pile on Syracuse too much, but it is, like, numbers wise, they redshirt a lot. They have, you know, higher roster numbers than most schools by a good amount, and, you know, pretty heavy on transfers as well. So I think as a kid, I understand maybe why kids will be nervous about the type of, you know, the kind of playing time they'll get there, or get redshirted, or, you know, lack of money, whatever it is. So it makes sense. And I think that, and again, Cuse is a great school, but when you have the opportunity to go to schools like Michigan, Virginia, Harvard, and Notre Dame, you know, the four schools kids have flipped from these last few weeks, you know, I get it from an academic standpoint.
So I come at this from a couple of different angles. The first is, how do you put the best team on the field? And the most logical answer is through the traditional recruiting methods. Syracuse, over the last 10 years, since essentially, you know, you could probably say the last 15 years, since the end of the Powell era, but even in the Powell era, you know, they were more national in their recruiting footprint than a lot of programs at the time. But since, you know, they've tended to take a more, I'm trying to think of the right word, non-traditional approach. It's kind of an all over the place type approach. You mentioned they bring in a lot of transfers. They do carry a large roster. They redshirt guys, and I would argue that, you know, they've had more success with that than most other programs, if not all other programs. And when you think about, you know, their recent good teams, you know, some of their biggest players were transfers, and even as many as the coach's son, Dylan Donahue, started at Air Force. But then on top of that, Nick Mariano was a transfer from UMass. Sergio Salcido was a redshirt. Ben Williams was a transfer from Holy Cross.
John Lade, right?
Yeah, Villanova. John Lade is probably, you know, that we did that 2011 cover and had, I think the headline was The Magnificent Seven. Jeremy Thompson was a OCC transfer. You know, there was just a number of different circuitous routes to get those guys there. I think a couple of things have occurred that, and I say that to say, I'm not certain that Syracuse doesn't still have a solid pipeline of talent. And it's just that their ability to compete in the traditional recruiting pipeline is not at the standard that their fans have set for the program overall. But there's another component to it that I think is worth mentioning. And it's how it's a two-sided conversation. Number one, is Central New York as high, is it producing as high quality talent as it was in the previous two or three decades? And if the answer is no, then how is that affecting Syracuse's ability to recruit and ability to hold guys at
home?
It's
a no.
And the second question is Syracuse keeping those guys at the rate that they should or the rate that they used to? And the answer there is also no. There are a couple of folks who you know, most recently a midfielder from CBA going to Duke. You know, that's an example of a player who may or may not have had Syracuse more part of his, you know, kind of goal trajectory 10 years ago, 15 to 20 years ago. But to me, this actually has a more direct line, because I look at Albany's emergence as a huge factor in Syracuse's ability to bring in high-profile recruits. And it starts with Lyle and Miles Thompson's decisions to go to Albany. And, you know, that was a function of a lot of different factors, including the job that Scott Marr did recruiting them. But my thought is that if Lyle and Miles don't go to Albany, does Albany get Connor Fields, T.D. Erland, and Tohoka Nanacoke? And if the answer is no, then the question becomes, does Syracuse get them? And if the answer there is yes, then Syracuse doesn't have a recruiting problem. So I look at it, or at least in terms of...
And they probably have more Final Four appearances than they've had, which I think they haven't been to since, what, 2013?
Yeah, they lost in the national championship to Duke in 2013.
Yep.
And I think that was the last 10 minutes of the Final Four. So I guess, you know, that's where I look at it, and I say, this is a multifaceted issue, and I think if I'm a Syracuse fan, my largest concern is, why are we not keeping the guys at home that we want? And, you know, how has it affected some of the other programs in state? That's where I start. And then I, you know, expand beyond that to the questions of guys like Russell Mayer and even Zawada, because, you know, there was a point at which Syracuse was one of the few landing spots for Canadians. And that's no longer the case. Basically, every program in the country has a shot at a Canadian as well.
Yeah, no. And I think, like, to me, I don't want to speak too much about Syracuse's demise, because I don't think that is the storyline here. I think it is, you know, why is the Syracuse brand maybe not as strong as it once was, which I believe is true. I don't think it is. I think it's still a very attractive place to go to school and play lacrosse, but I just generally think about, you know, these kids kind of feel stronger about the UNCs, the Virginias, and Yales of the world, you know, versus Syracuse. And I think, you know, to your point about local talent, I have definitely noticed a drop-off in talent from Section 3, from, you know, Cuse's backyard. Sure, there are still some studs that end up at Cuse or wherever, but there's been a shift recently in talent where a lot of it was in Syracuse. Now it's over in Section 5 in Rochester. There's so much more talent coming out of the Rochester area, and it's incredible, and they're going to more schools. You know, I think that's something to watch. But I do think that more often than not, Cuse will usually get the top player, the top two or three players from Section 3, as evidenced by a kid like Griffin Cook from Jamesville DeWitt. But I think it's interesting just to see the lack of talent in comparison to the past that has come out of their backyard.
To the question of brand, I think that the biggest factor is how many more programs want to be good at lacrosse than was true 10 to 15 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And so, because I think the same question can be asked about Hopkins and Virginia. And I think that the culprits, so to speak, are Duke, Denver, and Notre Dame. I think that there's an inverse correlation between the successes of the programs. And even though there isn't a one-to-one overlap in terms of the players that they're recruiting, you know, there's still, you know, there are only so many seats at the table if you're talking about perennial Final Four contenders. Maryland has essentially taken one and just hit it. That you can't find Maryland's seat at the table when it comes to the Final Four. John Tillman has put that in a stranglehold. And keep in mind, that was something that was not true in the 2000s and the 90s, right? So, you know,
it was the opposite. They can't get there.
Exactly. So it's not even the Final Four now. It's the Final Three and Maryland. And, you know, if Yale, which it appears is on the precipice of essentially making it a Final Two, and Yale and Maryland, then obviously the challenge becomes even harder. And so I think that, again, the question can be asked fairly, what are our expectations right now? That being said, you know, I do think that you got to attack these challenges systematically. And if I were in a position of doing so, I would say, all right, well, if we don't have the same advantage over kind of controlling Section 3, you know, how do we try to propagate that advantage toward controlling Section 5?
Yeah, and I don't think that this is an issue that will be around for a while, because to me, and I was having this conversation with someone last night, like, I think that there'll be less flips now. I mean, with the 21s being next in the recruiting cycle, there are only a half dozen commits before the new rules. So I just think that when you choose a school as a freshman or sophomore and you change your mind, and especially when you have a year and a half to not talk to your potential future college coaches, you're probably going to change your mind, you know, a la guys like Russell Mayer and Parlett. I don't think that this has to do with Syracuse's demise. I don't think that's realistic, because they will do what they do. They will get those transfers. They will get those JUCO kids. They'll get kids in their backyard. They'll be okay. They'll be fine.
Moving on, we talked about Zawada, so I want to stick on the 19s for a second. A pair of face-off specialists made their announcements recently. One guy that I had my eye on, I was surprised that he was on the board so late based on his performance at the Isle Invitational June session with Ottawa Capitals, was James Turco from the Hill Academy. He made his commitment to Lafayette. And then just a couple days ago, Mitch Myers from Southern California, St. John Bosco, who's been on our radar since attending the Fall Isle Northeast Invitational in 2016, made his commitment. He had been originally committed to Bryant, and he switched to
Dartmouth.
So the Big Green continue to score a number of recruiting wins on this fall trail, both in the 20 class and the 19 class. Moving on to a couple other notable commits in the class of 20, Loyola was one of those programs that hadn't made any splashes in September and October. They picked up their first two commits over the last 2 weeks, a pair of Loonies 2020 members, Seth Higgins and Danny Scott.
Yeah, I honestly don't know a ton about Scott. I think he's just a pretty strong athlete and strong in transition. I think Higgins is a player who I've been very impressed with. He transferred from Gerstle Academy in B Conference and MNAA to my alma mater, St. Paul's, and I think will be a pretty pivotal part of their offense going forward. You know, a big body can score. So I like those two commits for them. I think Loyalists are pretty strong national reach, maybe in comparison to when you were there, Terry, and I think that they've done a really good job getting local talent as well as, you know, kids from all over the East Coast.
The other 2020 I want to mention is Mateo Corsi, a attackman from the Hill Academy, a four-star player who made his commitment to Lehigh. He stood out at Midnight Mania. And then I want to talk about a 21, which is a little weird to be talking about right now. you reported on Sunday morning that Liam McLean, a Rye Country Day player who was playing with Westchester Predators at our Weekend 1 Fall Invitational at Rockburn Branch Park, made his commitment to Duke, but he did so as a member of the class of 2021, essentially saying that he was going to spend a PG year after he finished up his high school career. What was your reaction to that? I'm just curious, generally speaking, if this is something that you expect to see more frequently and kind of what it means for the landscape, because I think it's an interesting strategy for sure.
Yeah, I don't think this is something that will catch on a whole lot. I do think it's smart. I mean, I would imagine Liam had some good options as 20, but anytime you can, you know, do that extra year and develop and then go to a place like Duke, I mean, why the hell not? So it made sense from his perspective. I was very impressed with him over the summer at Maverick Showtime. And I remember talking to, you know, Matt Kinnear the other day. He was blown away with McLean at our event. So nice get for them. I think just whenever you can wrap up you know, your first commit in your 2021 class, a good feeling for Duke.
No doubt. So we just talked about a lot of very smart decisions. You know what's not smart? Job sites that send you tons of the wrong resumes to sort through. That is not smart. You know what is smart? Going to ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse to hire the right person. I want to take an opportunity to shout out Zasha Gonzalez, who is ending her 3+ year tenure at Inside Lacrosse and heading over to Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory. She was a member of our technology and web development team, did a great job as a designer developer, and we are currently utilizing ZipRecruiter, going through the process of hiring her replacement. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you, it finds them for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills, education, and experience for your job, and actively invites them to apply. So you get qualified candidates fast. That's why ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S. That rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. Right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse. Once more, ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse. The smartest way to hire. Ty, we were, we're on the trail, so to speak. November means that Division I evaluations can resume, and that means recruiting events can occur. You were at the Igloo Elite 80 this past weekend. What was your reaction to that?
I love that event. I mean, I see that a lot, but I think it's one of those events that's unique in the sense that, it combines the instructional aspect with games. I don't think that's something that is very prevalent in the landscape right now. So, you know, to have 20-minute station work or rotation, you know, for a total of 80 minutes with Division One head coaches, many of which are in the top 20, I think it's pretty cool experience for these kids. And I love it because it's cool to kind of see these coaches interact. I mean, it's hysterical. You, of course, have Kevin Warren, you know, jawing at anybody and everybody and having fun. And everyone just keeps it very light. The kids love it. I think everyone's having a good time. I know I had a really good time. The talent was very strong. I think it was cool last year. You know, I was looking at my recap from last year, and a lot of the 20s that caught my eye have committed or were ranked. And I think that, you know, to look at this 2021 class comparison, I expect many of the top kids that we saw to be committed in a year's time. And it's generally a good building block, stepping stone, to go to that event and get coached up and then kind of move forward with your recruitment and get better that way. But I had a blast. It's a great event. It was cool to kind of see them combine the individual portion with a little club tournament portion on Sunday. They had some local clubs and even, you know, teams like Mad Dog from California, you know, came, and Orange Crush from Syracuse, DC Express, of course, from DC, a very strong 2021 group. But yeah, I loved it. I think it's a pretty cool thing just to have 18 or 19 D1 head coaches, you know, on staff. Very, very cool to be there.
And down in our neck of the woods on October 27th, we hosted the IL Mid-Atlantic Invitational, or In-Atlantic Prospect Day, excuse me. A couple of folks who stood out there. Scott Cole, an attackman 2020 from McDonough playing with the Annapolis Hawks, was just, I mean, he couldn't really be stopped as far as his ability to score goals. Randall Brown, a 2020 middie from the Shipley School, who plays for Dukes, was really impressive. And then a face-off guy, Aiden Shortley, 2020 from Georgetown Prep, who plays for the Crabs, also very impressive. And then this past weekend, we hosted the weekend one of the Fall IL Invitational, which is a club team event. You mentioned Liam McLean's commitment. The Westchester Predators were really, really impressive over the course of the entire week at multiple grade levels. Their 21 team put on a show on Sunday, and their 22s did as well. I was really impressed by the 22 group from the API Diamondbacks. A lot of Anne Arundel County players, a group that had been to the World Series of Youth Lacrosse the year prior. A lot of really impressive players there. If you want to see more about both, make sure to head to insidelacrosse.com/recruiting. We've got all tournament teams as well as photos and evaluations up on both of those. And we're preparing for this weekend. We've got weekend two of the Fall IL Invitational. Ty and I will be there on Saturday. And then over the rest of the landscape, we will have folks at the Adrenaline High Rollers event out west and the FLG in 3D event on Saturday in Delaware as well. Ty, only a couple weeks left of fall recruiting. You have posted and shared comments and thoughts about fall recruiting periodically over the course of the last several years, and I'm sure that this is an opinion that kind of continues to evolve. What's your read on the landscape at this moment?
I mean, I was thinking about it this morning. I wouldn't be shocked if fall lacrosse is no longer a thing in 5 years, but I think it is one of those things that, from a, you know, club's perspective, it's viable to have your kids, you know, out there more than just the summer. I mean, I get it. But overall, I don't think that it is anywhere close to the product that you get in the summer. And, I mean, just sitting with, you know, talking to college coaches this week, you know, I asked them, how was Saturday? How was Sunday? I'm like, yeah, it was all right. And it was okay. Fall lacrosse stinks. I hate it. Can't stand it. You know, it's all the same opinions. And, you know, I don't mind it. I think that it is, there are still players that I see and think, wow, that kid got better in 3 or 4 months. But I don't think that it is the best possible product. I think that if you're a school that is making a decision off the, you know, off the fall alone, you may be in trouble, because I generally think that it hurts the multi-sport athletes that haven't had a stick in their hands at all. So it's not what I want it to be, and I don't think there are many college coaches that love it, but it is one of those things that you have to do. You have to be out there, you know, and I get it from that perspective.
So one of the things, and I think I've said this on this podcast, but in case I haven't, I'll just restate it. So when the rule changes occurred, my point of view was that the lacrosse recruiting landscape had changed to a 4-class year situation, and it was unlikely to change back to a 1, 2, or 3-class year situation in terms of the groups that were going to be evaluated. And as a result, you know, when a coach or a staff develops criteria by which they evaluate players, you know, skill, IQ, hustle, speed, strength, the normal elements of a player that you want to see, you know, one of the things that was missing, because there was typically such a condensed window of time when you would identify a player and then make a decision on whether or not you wanted him or her to be a part of your program, one of the things that was missing was being able to evaluate how much and quickly that player improves. And I thought that the changes were going to give opportunities for college coaches to evaluate a player over the course of a 3, 4, or 5 season arc, meaning that you could watch a player summer after his freshman year, fall of his sophomore year, spring of his sophomore year, summer of his sophomore year, and then make a decision on him after, you know, September 1 of his junior year, right? So now you've seen him over 4 different periods, and you can chart his growth and development. And now you have an additional important quality to be able to make a determination on. And I was disappointed this past summer to see so few college coaches watching 21s, and I was confused as to why. I think the answer is because they felt like they hadn't fully divulged or fully evaluated all that they wanted to for the 20s, or even if they felt like they had, because I heard college guys be like, I just can't watch these groups anymore, but they were still watching them. It would almost felt obliged, right? It was like, maybe I'm going to see something else, or maybe I'm going to miss something. But typically, like, that meant that, like, they were talking themselves out of guys or whatever else. And I thought that that was more harmful than good, and they'd be better spent divvying up some more of their time to watch members of the class of 21. And then they could watch them this fall, and they could watch them next spring, and then they could watch them next summer. And now all of a sudden, again, you've got a full year, 4 different kind of unique points of evaluation. And so that's where I see value in the fall, because if you go from the summer to the spring, 7 months unfold, and you haven't seen the player, it can be pretty jarring in terms of like what, like who, you know what I mean? Whereas it's a smoother development arc. So that's where I see value. I mean, to that point, there's certainly, you know, the issue of field availability, field quality, the comfort of everybody in attendance, right? Like on the days that are cold and wet, it can be pretty miserable, and it makes it difficult to do your job, whether your job is to play or to coach or to sit on the sidelines and watch. And so, you know, that's definitely a factor in terms of determining the quality of everybody's time spent. But I hope that, you know, I'm interested in your comment that you could imagine a future that fall across doesn't exist. I mean, one of the things that I was thinking about is, you know, for college coaches, I wonder if they had their choice, would they rather flip-flop and recruit in October and play competitions in November? You can't do that because of fall high school sports, right? Yeah. Like, you essentially say, if you're a lacrosse player that wants to get seen in the fall and you have to get seen in October, you can't play.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's an interesting thing to consider because it's a much more pleasant experience for everybody. You're not as far removed as you were from the last time you played competitive lacrosse at the end of July or whatever. So, I don't know. I mean, you know, I think it's a worthwhile conversation to have. But again, you know, for me, the thing that I would like to see is coaches valuing a player's rate of improvement more than they were in the, say, 3 to 5 year kind of increased fervor around early recruiting.
And I think right now, I mean, despite my sentiments, I do think that fall lacrosse is more important now than it was. And I think it's also important to get a, you know, get a good sense of the 21s, because, I mean, just thinking about it in my head, like, I do think that the 21s are the least evaluated class in the last decade.
I would agree.
With the way things have shaken out with the rules. I barely know them. I mean, and I was watching 21s all weekend, and it's funny because I was learning a lot. I was learning some new names. And, you know, 2 years ago, I would have had a good sense of the current sophomore class for the past 2 years. So now you have a smaller window, and I think, you know, fall across probably is more important between the 20s and 21s, you know, than it has been in the past. So do I think there's a chance it may not exist in 5 years? Sure. But I do think that it probably will, because clubs will make sure it's still a thing. They want an opportunity to keep training their kids and have them compete, because the value of club lacrosse will go down if fall lacrosse does not exist.
Well, it's certainly a interesting conversation to leave off on, as folks are probably listening to this in the car on the way to a field. But Ty, as always, appreciate your time on the IL Preps podcast. If you are currently looking for a new candidate for a job, make sure to visit ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse. And if you like what you heard, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever else you listen to your podcast. Tell a friend. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Terrence Voigt. He's at Ty Zanders. We are at @inside_lacrosse. We'll be out all week, all weekend, and we appreciate you listening. We'll check back next week.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.